calendar year for our health benefit increase in our total increase in premiums. The premium actual increase came in far less than that, so we adjusted our percentages accordingly to drop those costs down. I thought it was important for the governing board and the community to understand what actually is included in that employee benefits line item. It isn't just CalSTRS, CalPERS, and employee benefits. Those are the largest percentages there, but it also includes Social Security, the employer's portion of Medicare, unemployment insurance, workers' compensation, post-employment benefits, and also early retirement incentives. Two things I will talk about on this slide, and I'll provide some more information on the next slides. But the post-employment benefits, those are for those employees who have retired and received some type of a retirement benefit from the district in the forms of health insurance during retirement. So you can see the cost there in 17-18 is $3.5 million. It is projected to increase to $3.9 million, and then in 19-20 to $4.3 million. The early retirement incentive are those payments that we are continuing to make from the last early retirement incentive that we offered, as Henry talked about earlier. 1920 is the last year that we will make those payments from the last early retirement incentive. This slide has a lot of information on it. I added some information and updated it from the last, but you can see 12-13 CalSTRS, we paid $5.5 million. We are projected to spend $27.4 million in CalSTRS contributions through 19-20. The red numbers there indicate the percentages of the employer contribution. And so you can see in 12-13 and 13-14, we paid 8.25%. By the end of 19-20, we will be paying 18.13% in employer contributions towards CalSTRS. There is an additional increase that does not appear on this graph, and that's in 2021 when the percentage will be 19.1%. The green graph represents the increases for CalPERS, $2 million in 12-13, growing to $6.2 million, projected $6.2 million in 19-20. And you can also see the current percentages that are in there for CalPERS as well. There's one difference between the CalPERS percentages and the CalSTRS percentages. CalSTRS percentages are actually in law. CalPERS percentages can be changed. They are estimations based upon from the CalPERS board. And so you can see that those percentages from 12-13 through 15-16 did not increase dramatically. They did increase pretty substantially in 17-18. And CalPERS has indicated that in 18-19 and 19-20, there will be additional increases. We'll have more information from CalPERS in the coming months that will provide better clarity as to what the actual rate will be in 18-19 and 19-20.
Since the state's doing so well on the revenue side, are there any conversations up there about shifting, relieving districts and other public entities from this burden, which is painful, obviously, and paying it at the state level?
So there are conversations, but not at the statewide level. Well, I should say there are conversations at the statewide level that school districts are bringing as something that you need to solve. At this point in time, I don't see that's something that the governor is going to do. But I do see that if he did do it last year or in our current year, that he provided some one-time funding outside Prop 98 to help, I think it was the community colleges, or it was the state employees and providing funding to CalPERS. It was state employees. And so he did do that for CalPERS, but again, it was not within Prop 98. I don't see Governor Brown doing that in this budget, but I will tell you the individuals that I talk to, the lobbyists that I talk to on behalf of school districts, this is a big issue for them, and they would love to be able to see some additional state funding being provided to CalPERS and CalSTRS to ease the burden for the local school district. But I don't see anything happening on this in 18-19. Yes? Yep. Uh-huh. I have a next slide.
Okay.
Thank you. Great segue into my next slide. So health and welfare current costs are left of the box. So you can see health and welfare costs rose in 12-13 from $15.8 million to 16-17 to $23.1 million. There was another increase for 17-18 based upon the increase of our cap that was included, our defined benefit cap that was within our collective bargaining language. But you can see the increase for 18-19 and 19-20 is much smaller. Those increases are as the result of a budget for hiring new employees as the result of growth. And there's approximately a $300,000 budget for hiring new employees and then providing the health and welfare benefits for those employees as well. There is no budgeted increase for health and welfare benefit contributions above what the current district cap is. So does that answer your question? And I will say that's a typo on my part. The numbers here are correct. The numbers on the graph, I did not get changed. And so that is a typo on my part. I will correct that before it goes to the district's website. We had some additional adjustments within books and supplies and operating. For three primary reasons. One is in 17-18, remember we have a restricted component of our fund balance and also a committed fund component of our fund balance. Sites can't spend money if the budget hasn't been allocated. In order to do that, I need to take it out of the committed fund balance or restricted and move it up into the expenditures. And so we've made that adjustments within books and supplies and operating. We talked earlier about increase in federal revenue. Again, with federal revenue, in order to spend it, I also need to have an offsetting expense adjustment. And also, same thing with donations. When we receive money for donations, in order for sites to be able to spend it, there also needs to be a reciprocating budget line item as well. So we've added that for 17-18. 18-19 and 19-20, we, as talked about in the past, increased federal revenues, increased projected donation receipts. We increased a little bit for instructional materials and a future textbook adoption. And then also remember the board is required to spend 3% a year on routine restricted maintenance amounts. And so because the budget amount increased within total expenses, we had to increase the 3% allocation for routine restricted maintenance as well. So these are the first interim expenses. You can see total expenses now in 17-18 are $223.7 million. At the adopted budget, $218.9 million, or a $4.8 million increase. And then in 18-19 and 19-20, 18-19 a very negligible $1 million increase. 19-20 a little bit larger of an increase. Again, additional funding being allocated for a future textbook adoption currently planned to occur in 19-20. So what does all that mean? You see the revenue side, you see the expense side, but when you look at it together, you can see that our beginning fund balance of $35 million, projected revenues and projected expenses, you can see that our change in fund balance for the current year is $12.1 million, $15.4 million, and then $24.6 million. I will say that those 17-18 and 18-19 numbers are an improvement from the adopted budget. The 17-18 number improved by approximately $1.3 million, and 18-19 improved by $2 million. So it's less deficit spending than was in the adopted budget. For 19-20, that actually is $1.3 million more of deficit spending, in part because of including a budget line item for a textbook adoption currently planned to occur in 19-20. When you look at our components of the fund balance, again, you can see the deficit spending across the top, the unaudited actuals. In the 16-17 line item, you can see that additional reserves were projected to be or finished at $11.4 million. I am happy to report that now with the first interim report, originally we anticipated no reserves left at the end of this year, no additional reserves. You can see now we have $300,000 we anticipate. So it's a minor improvement, but it's a small improvement. It's better than a zero. In addition to that, the committed funds are a little bit higher than at the general at the adopted budget as well. Because of those revenue increases, the committed funds, we don't have to use as much of them. But you can see that the total amount there in those green boxes is $12.8 million. But if you look at the deficit spending in 18-19 and 19-20, there is not enough resources in those two green boxes to offset the deficit spending in 18-19 and 19-20. As the result of that, based upon current projections and the first interim report, the board would need to make expenditure reductions of about $3.6 million in 18-19. Or cumulative reductions through 19-20 of $28.4 million, just to maintain a 3% minimum reserve. Any questions before I move on?
So we'd be moving forward without any additional reserves?
Yeah, based upon these projections, if you only made $28.4 million of budget adjustments, you would have no reserves. So
beyond the minimum.
Beyond the minimum. And so if there were at any point in time an unplanned expense, a decrease in state funding, the district would have to make additional budget adjustments in order to weather those situations. Again, based upon current projections. Now, I talked about earlier a what-if scenario I was going to show, and that what-if scenario is, what if LCFF were fully funded in 17-18, or for the 18-19 school year? If that were to occur, in 18-19, the district would receive about $2.4 million more in LCFF funding than is already budgeted for and included in the $215.6 million of projected revenues. That would result in an ending fund balance not of $7.5 million, but rather $9.8 million. In addition to that, in 1920, the district would receive another $1.7 million, more than included in 1920, resulting in not a projected ending fund balance of negative $17.1 million, but now negative $13 million. On the fund balance side, that additional $2.4 million would decrease, again, that deficit spending number to $13.1 million. And it would decrease our additional reserve, or the minimum amount of cut. It would decrease that from $3.6 million to $1.2 million. Again, and then additional $1.7 million in 1920 would decrease that year's deficit spending from $24.6 to $22.9 and reduce the cumulative cut now from $28.4 million to $26.7 million. The reason why I wanted to show this is fully funding LCFF does not solve our problem. It is great additional revenue, and it certainly helps us, but it does not solve the problem throughout the 18-19 and 19-20 MYP period.
Just out of curiosity, have you ever done this math to see what it would look like if we were funded at the county average?
I did not. I did not do that.
It would be dramatically different, obviously.
It would be dramatically different. If you think about it alone, based upon a roughly 20,000 ADA and almost $740 less than we're $740 less per ADA, you can see that, you know, 8 times 20 would be $16 million. Completely changes this financial situation.
Yeah, I did the math here real quick. Yeah. It's about $16 million.
Yeah. Now, again, that countywide average is a little changed, too, because of the unduplicated count, but still, right. $16 million is a good ballpark number. So some historical information and future considerations as we manage the road ahead. First is, based upon current projections, the district is facing an operating deficit in the current year, and that operating deficit is projected to continue throughout the forecast period, minus substantially more funding from the state. I went back, and I'm going to jump back one slide here, and you can see that I did do some rough calculations at one point in time to say we would need conservatively, and it still doesn't even completely solve our deficit spending, because you can see in 1920 our deficit spending is $25 million. But what if the state gave us an extra $1,000 per ADA? That would provide an extra $20 million for the school district. But the problem is Prop 98 funding statewide would have to increase $6 billion because that's the total amount of funds that's estimated in K-14 education. There's about 6 million students. That would mean the governor would have to take all of the $5.4 billion plus more to not only fully fund LCFF but also increase the base at the same point in time. That would provide it, $20 million would go a long way. It would certainly go a long way into providing some additional funding to the state. But that's the kind of additional money San Marcos would need from the state when I talk about substantial increase in state funding.
But let's be honest, to be sustainable over the long term, that has to happen.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Don't disagree with you. So again, The governor is going to come out with his budget proposal on January 10th. At the January board meeting, Melissa has asked me to provide an update to the board regarding the governor's budget proposal and, if implemented as introduced, what that might mean for us. It'll be a very short presentation to make Michael happy. Where is it?
Michael's not listening.
He missed it.
Yeah.
Mark and I do have a bet that it will get fully funded.
Yes. I agree with
you. I'm
missing
optimism here. Yeah. Yeah. I know it's chump change, but, you know, we have to find sunshine where we can find it. Randy?
Well, and one of the things that I think just for everybody that's still here with us at 9:30 at night should know that we all heard loud and clear and had lots of discussions at California School Board Association's conference that we need to go from 40, you can argue 40 what place we are in national funding levels, that we need to go back to the top 10. Mm-hmm. And that just the Prop 98 part of our funding doesn't cut it. If we're going to make some significant changes in our budget outlook, we need to be not funded at the minimum. Mm-hmm. We need to be funded way above and beyond. So I know that that is something that we all were hearing about in our workshops and so forth there. And what we listened loud and clear for as we were hearing our gubernatorial candidates speak, because they don't all agree. So, mm-hmm. you know, I think our rallying cry as all entities of our school board community is that we need more funding, and it's not going to, and we need to vote our conscience on that, because not everyone sees that the sky is falling the way we do. Mm-hmm. So,
well, what was incredible is how and concerning is how this wasn't a major topic, at least for some of the politicians. They seem to be totally uninformed about this situation. We only look out 3 years, right? But in year four and year five and year six, STRS goes up, CalPERS goes up, healthcare costs go up, everything continue to rise. Mm-hmm. And so if we're supposed to celebrate the full funding of LCFF, that's absurd.
It is.
I mean, unless there's some dramatic change, you will see school districts in the next several years literally go under.
Mm-hmm. Well, the estimation is right now that even highly funded supplemental concentration grant districts are deficit spending.
Yeah, unbelievable.
And you've heard Mike Fine say his concern is that districts aren't accurately reporting that they are qualified, some on the bridge of being negative.
I
will say at CSBA, it was disappointing to me listening to the LAO, Legislative Analyst Office, particularly talk about issues around STRS and PERS, that the state legislature is comfortable with the way things are.
Right. And I'll say it again, in case somebody's listening. It's an absolute embarrassment that the richest state in the country with the highest property values during this booming economy, and it is booming by most standards, that we're ranked in the high 40s when it comes to school funding. It's
an
embarrassment.
Prop 98 itself calls for us to be in the top 10. Right?
Yeah.
So I talked to one of my colleagues, and this is just to echo what you said. Talked to another one of our colleagues, Unified District, who gets significantly more funding than we get. They cut $10 million last year, and they're anticipated to cut another $9 million this year. And they get significantly mm-hmm. more funding than we get, both supplemental and concentration grant funding. And they're even cutting their budgets because the supplemental and concentration grant funding is not enough in order to maintain the pace that of the rising costs.
Well, and to do what you're supposed to do under yes. supplemental and concentration, which is to provide additional services above the base program
yes.
for students who generate that funding.
Mm-hmm.
So it will go down that LCFF over the long term is a failure.
Without significant changes.
Yes.
So, as stated, the current projection calls for budget reductions over the next two fiscal years, again, only to maintain our required 3% minimum reserve. In 18-19, that number is $3.6 million, and then by 19-20, the cumulative reductions are $28.4 million. The following is a draft list of budget reductions, and these are the budget reductions that appear on the next agenda item 11.8, and stated in the resolution 19-17-18. As a reminder, the governing board is asked by the county or the county office of ed to pass this resolution of the draft budget reductions. Because we are a qualified certified district and in order to identify that the board is working on draft, preparing a list of budget reductions. So some of those draft list of budget reductions at the district office is a reduction of 4 FTEs at the district office. The cumulative savings over the MYP period is $1.2 million. Within site administration, a reduction of 2 FTEs in site administration personnel. That estimated cumulative savings, again, over the MYP period is about $800,000. In instructional programs, an elimination, possible elimination of the district CTI program, formerly known as BITSA, modifying the operations at the Foothills High School, modify the elementary physical education program. The total projected cumulative savings throughout the MYP period is $2.7 million. Class sizes, adjust the regular education class size staffing ratios within the current contract parameters. The total cumulative savings there being $9.2 million over the MYP. Personnel reassignments. I'm sorry, that title is wrong. The personnel reassignments is not up top. That's site-based student support programs, a reduction there, estimated savings of $1.2 million. There's some personnel assignments. Various positions will be reassigned back to classroom or site positions as current one-time funding is exhausted. That isn't a savings, it's a cost avoidance, because if we let that funding run out and allow those positions to continue to save, that'll actually add a cost to the budget. And so moving them back to the classroom or site positions will be a cost avoidance. And then through negotiations and concessions, the district will seek revisions to master contracts with our two employee associations and also concessions with our unrepresented employees, and that's management, yielding financial savings beginning in 18-19. And the total cumulative savings currently needed is projected to be $20 million over the next 2 years. If you add all of that up, the total cumulative savings for the entire draft list is $35.1 million, which is about $7 million more than the current projected revenues or current projected reductions needed to ensure the required 3% minimum reserve. But I'd ask the board and the community to remember two things. One, that's a draft list and their estimated cost savings. And so the amounts may change. What actually ends up happening may change. And also, if you're only at a minimum 3% reserve, you have no surplus and you have no emergency reserve for future revenue decreases at the statewide level or expenditure increases outside the district's control. And so with that, I'll open it up to any additional discussion or conversation that we already haven't talked about.
Mark, I have a question. So our first interim does not reflect any of those proposed budget adjustment items, reduction.
It does not. I talked to the County Office of Ed, and they indicated that since none of them have the only ones that have been incorporated are the ones that I shared at the last board meeting have already happened in the current school year. The other items that have not occurred yet, those are not built into the budget.
Okay. So this is what I kind of get frustrated about with even doing these reports, because we're not going to move forward with this is not going to be what our budget looks like for next year. This is not what our spending is going to look like for next year. Regardless if things have to be negotiated or not negotiated, we will implement these cuts. So, and I think other districts do that. That's how other districts are able to not be qualified or negative, because they're already budgeting in reductions into their budget. So I guess I'm just a little bit confused on why. And I feel like these are public documents. They go out, and it looks like, you know, we're deficit spending all this money and that, you know, we're haphazardly spending, and that's not the case. These conversations have happened. So I don't know if I just want to voice my frustration or get some real answers, because clearly districts are doing this. I mean, I can look up neighboring districts, and all of a sudden, you know, their books and supplies go from $10 million to $5 million in year three. That's not sustainable. That's not even possible. So kind of help me understand why we do it this way and other people are doing it other ways, and nobody seems to care.
I call the County Office of Ed, and I say, these are my two situations. I can build a budget based upon current known projections, based upon no changes, or I can build in some draft list of reductions, but they haven't been implemented yet. And when I spoke to the County Office of Ed, their preference was to build it based upon known projections, known estimated increases, until an expenditure reduction has actually been implemented. That was the advice that I received from the County Office of Ed. I can't speak to what other districts do. I don't know their situation. I don't know if in 18-19 they're doing a textbook adoption and it falls off in 19-20. I don't know the situations.
So when we do our next interim, though, and if we have passed this resolution for draft proposed reductions, would they be reflected
at the second interim report? If we have actually started implementing reductions, then yes, I would be able to incorporate those into the second interim report.
But I don't know what your definition of actually implemented means. Does that mean that we've actually said we're not going to have PE next year or high school sports or something like that? Like, do we need to say it? Do we need to start the year? Do we need to, like, fire coaches? I don't know what actually implemented means.
People.
Well, you would have to go through the March 15th process of releasing folks and laying people off and approving particular reductions.
Okay.
And then we release people.
And then when is our next interim that we do?
March.
So at that same meeting, or do we do another round of this where it doesn't really...
We will have to do a third interim report as well. So it will also be in the third interim.
So let me just be clear. In the second interim, any proposed reductions of labor that we do will not be reflected in the second interim because they're at the same board meeting.
Well, we will approve the reductions, but no, you would not see them in the second interim.
But you see my frustration because then again, we're now putting out another document with misleading information. It's misleading. Mm-hmm. That's exactly what it is. And we're creating it. Mm-hmm. So I get frustrated with that, and I don't even really know how to speak to this because this is not what's going to end up happening.
Well, here's the problem is I can't change a budget without direction from the board. And so if the board doesn't go through the necessary steps to... As Melissa said, in order to change some of these things, it would require laying people off and those types of things. If that doesn't occur by the board, which is going to happen at the March 15th notice, I can't change the budget because the individuals will still be employees. Mm-hmm. And so they're still due a salary. And so I would have to include them in the budget. If there is something that says, one of those things on there is the CTI program. So I'll say the CTI program. Mm-hmm. If the governing board says or the superintendent says, we're not going to offer the CTI program and we start putting communication out by that, and that's one of those things that's hard and fast, then yes, I can incorporate that savings into the budget at the second interim. I've got to have a reasonable assurance that it's actually going to happen in order to be included. The intent here is not to portray information that is, I can't remember the word,